Welcome to The Greek Current, a podcast by Halk and Kathimerini. I'm your host, Thanos Davelis. There are some analysts who hope that with the election behind them, Erdogan will change, leaving the door open for a reset in relations with the West and the U.S. This, as Endis Amenidis, Halk's executive director, argues in Kathimerini, is nonsense, warning that Erdogan will only change if he's forced to. Endis Amenidis joins me today to discuss why, if there is to be an opportunity for a reset in relations, that can only be realized if Washington sheds its image of appeaser when it comes to Turkey and uses its leverage to make Erdogan realize that Ankara needs Washington more than Washington needs Ankara. Endi, great to have you back on The Greek Current.
Good to be back, Danu.
Endi, since Erdogan won re-election, there have been several analyses of what type of foreign policy he's going to pursue. You've argued in Kathimerini that the more pressing question, however, is what will he be allowed to get away with? Why is that?
Well, because one, he's been allowed to get away with a lot. He has presided over taking the bilateral relationship between U.S. and Turkey to new lows. As I argue in the article, and I cite a report by a frequent podcast guest, Stephen Cook, neither friend nor foe is how he describes the U.S.-Turkey relationship or Turkey's approach to that. He's also on this podcast has said that he would retitle that report more foe than friend. That's certainly a feeling here in the U.S. towards Turkey, but clearly it's a feeling in Turkey against the U.S. Erdogan used Biden as a campaign foil, saying that Kılıçdaroğlu was endorsed by Biden. Of course, we had similar stuff at the PSECA conference in Washington, D.C., member of Congress after member of Congress coming and saying, hey, I hope there's a change. I hope we don't have to deal with Erdogan anymore. And we have covered for years threats towards the U.S. like the Ottoman slap, a recent drone attack that was reportedly meant for a Kurdish general who was being accompanied by U.S. personnel. The Turks were warned off. They fired a missile anyway. So this is a difficult relationship. There always seems to be some nice rhetoric, but the moves belie that rhetoric. And they demonstrate that truly these are not two countries that share either values or fundamental interests anymore.
There are some, Endi, that hope that with the election behind him, Erdogan will change, leaving the door open for a reset in relations. Given what you've laid out, are they ultimately forgetting the old expression, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time?
Yeah, they are. And any talk of reset is complete, utter nonsense. Erdogan will not change. In fact, he's probably emboldened. He won. He did not sound magnanimous in his speech against his domestic opponents, despite saying he wants to be the president for all 85 million Turks. He has not demonstrated that he's going to abandon his unorthodox policies, economic policies, you know, his lambasting the interest rate lobby. You saw his coalition nationalist partners, Bahçeli, talk about lobbies that were trying to take down Turkey. He will pretend that he's changing because he knows that pretense works on American diplomats who have a short tenure and, frankly, an inherent belief that they will be either the secretary or assistant secretary ambassador who will finally achieve a diplomatic breakthrough. Let's take the president ambassador in Turkey, Jeff Flake. I'm sure he believes he's an accomplished politician. He probably believes he can go somewhere where his predecessors did not go. And he also has a limited tenure. So Erdogan is fully aware that Jeff Flake wants to get something done while Jeff Flake is ambassador, that Tony Blinken wants to get something done while Tony Blinken is secretary of state, and he can wait them all out. So he may put just enough bait to get people to move in his direction, but we're not going to see any fundamental change.
Since we're unlikely to see any change, is there then any opportunity for a reset?
Well, there is. There is. If the Biden administration breaks a longstanding bipartisan tradition of president after president of just appeasing Turkey, they have to disabuse him of his deep-seated belief that if he's intransigent enough, that if he digs in long enough, America will be the one that blinks. We saw that with the Pastor Brunson case. He held Pastor Brunson hostage, thinking that it will get him something on the Golan front until finally the U.S. imposed sanctions. He held longer than he should have onto the S-400 case, thinking that the U.S. will blink. Again, that got him CATSA sanctions and it got him kicked out of the F-35 program. There is enough evidence that pressure works on Turkey. We've been hearing from administration after administration, you know, Turkey doesn't like to be confronted openly, quiet diplomacy works. But clearly the only thing that has worked is pressure. But the United States has not applied or even threatened to apply pressure consistently enough for Erdogan to take Washington seriously. I mean, we can go through more specific opportunities, but it starts with stopping the long tradition of appeasement.
Let's get into those opportunities, Andy. You know, where do you see opportunities for a reset?
Well, the first one he has to move on is Russia. Clearly, the U.S. and the West are united on Russia. Turkey seems to be playing a little bit on that front, but more with the global South and East. He's trying to convince people that he plays a useful mediator role. His greatest use to the West is not as a mediator, but helping up the pressure. And frankly, because it is this Russia factor that caused the rupture in the U.S.-Turkey relationship to begin with, the S-400 controversy, which I already referred to, and that controversy shocked even the most strident Turkey fans in the U.S. And despite initial hope that Turkey would be an asset in supporting Ukraine because of the drones it supplied, it has become a liability more often than an asset because it needs Russia on several fronts. And the great help that they gave early on, those drones are proving no longer effective. So if we are to keep the war in Ukraine from becoming another forever war, and there is in the U.S. public, both to right and left, there is no appetite for more forever wars, Ankara has to choose sides. And that's the first one. If given the economic cliff Turkey is facing, he has to get a real ultimatum that serving as a sanctions evading mechanism for Vladimir Putin will have costs.
Andy, I want to focus on the F-16 and Sweden because these are issues where many see potential for movement. Everyone is anticipating a quick turnaround for Turkey to approve Sweden's accession to NATO. Should this happen, some, including Representative McCall, the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, have said that they would be open to selling Turkey F-16s. What message should the U.S. be sending here?
There's no problem with being open to it, but there should be a more clear message. Unfortunately, as in many cases, on many fronts, the U.S. has sent constantly mixed signals. And we saw this even from the administration. President Biden congratulated Erdogan, and it made it seem, again, they were just brief remarks to reporters, but he made it seem like the F-16s in Sweden were linked. Then the next day, Secretary Blinken said they weren't linked. Turkey itself does not want them to be linked. But the right message was the one that was given by Senator Menendez and, frankly, by Congressman Meeks, ranking member Meeks on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, that there are many issues, that Sweden is the beginning of establishing that openness. It's a necessary but insufficient condition to reestablishing these arms trade ties with Turkey. And of course, Sweden is what everyone is pointing to right now because it seems like it's a hang up in NATO unity, right? Finland got in and Turkey, of course, Hungary has not ratified Sweden either, but there is this almost magical belief that if Sweden gets in, it's a demonstration of NATO unity and a real message to Russia. Of course, Russia is in no position to be able to attack a well-armed Sweden. There are ways to protect Sweden, even if Turkey maintains its intransigence. You can arm Sweden. You could put more sanctions on Russia if they threaten or resort to saber rattling against Sweden. But the real, the more existential threat, and something that Russia would love to see, by the way, is the inter-NATO conflict and the inter-NATO tension between Turkey and Greece turning into an open conflict. And that's the condition that both Senator Menendez and Congressman Meeks, reporting focuses on them because they obviously have approval rights on these F-16 deals. But as we've heard from several others, Senator Van Hollen, the Hellenic Caucus, many, many others, that this is a real issue, that we cannot be arming Turkey in order to commit belligerent acts against Greece. We cannot be stand by watching U.S. F-16s, which are meant to be used against common adversaries, be used within the alliance to challenge Greek sovereignty. And for those who want to downplay what kind of a threat Erdogan poses, and there are some even in Greece that point out that there has not been a shooting war between Greece and Turkey during Erdogan's reign. What those people ignore is that his weaponization of migrants at the Evros border in 2020, that was an act of war. The fact that Greece did not fall back prevented it from turning into a greater war. His moves in the Aegean, again, that same year, were an act of war. The fact that it did not turn into a shooting war is because Greece was both ready and calm. So the U.S. is relying on Greek restraint. That's diplomatic malpractice. Erdogan is not a peaceful actor. He is not a stabilizing factor. He's someone who has participated in war and, in fact, provoked it in Syria, in northern Iraq, in Libya, in Artsakh. He has rejected the premise of a Cyprus solution. He has, and his puppet in occupied Cyprus, have opened Verosha against UN Security Council resolutions. He makes incursions into the dead zone, into this buffer zone in occupied Cyprus all the time, virtually every week. So this is not someone we should be assuming will not take aggressive action, especially when he has promoted legal theories in writing to the United Nations challenging Greek sovereignty. A point we've made over and over again is the absence or the temporary halt in overflights is not an end to the overflights, because there has been no declared we're not doing this anymore. And let's be clear about what he's used his existing F-16s for. During the last year and a half, all right, or let's start in February of 22 when Russia invaded Ukraine, Erdogan used American F-16s against Russia zero times. He used them against Greece all the time.
Andy, wrapping up, for years, Turkey has operated under the impression that Washington needs it more than it needs Washington. For the first time in a long time, you've argued in Gathimedini that Erdogan could realize that he actually needs the U.S. more than it needs him. Is the Biden administration playing with fire here if it risks not using the leverage that it has?
Sure, it's not going to have this leverage again. Unfortunately, I think the Biden administration tried kind of a Goldilocks approach, tried to balance too much on how to promote democracy in Turkey. And the end result is authoritarianism is going to be deeper and maybe more unmovable and unmutable in the short term than anybody wants it to be. But Turkey's economy is in dire need. Their pretense of, oh, we can go to the BRICS bank or we can go to the Gulf countries, this may remind a lot of our listeners about some of the promises or theories that people were promoting during the height of the Greek crisis. And let's put it this way, Greece did not get bailed out by those sources, even though its bailout would have been a lot less costly. The U.S.'s leverage includes the ability to influence IMF assistance. Now, Erdogan has sworn that he's not ever going to go to the IMF, but what if he needs to? Again, the F-16s, Turkey needs them in the short term. They do not want to fall behind Greece or anybody else. There is also the Halkbank case, which we've covered on this podcast. And Turkey lost at the Supreme Court. They're going to get one more chance to appeal a specific question. But this prosecution is going to go ahead, and they face the potential of having the highest penalty ever levied against a bank. And that would be catastrophic to the Turkish economy. And then there's energy diplomacy. There are significant energy resources in the Eastern Mediterranean. There's a lot of energy cooperation. There's the EastMed Gas Forum, which, whether it becomes the energy forum or not, it's a significant new international forum that Turkey is excluded from. And if they want to get in, they have to make changes, not everybody else. So if the Biden administration can't utilize this once-in-a-generation leverage, not only will several opportunities to reset be missed, but relations will go from bad to much, much worse.
Andy, thanks for joining us again. Always great speaking with you.
Thanks, Dano.
In other news, a court of appeal in Albania extended the pretrial detention of the ethnic Greek mayor-elect of Himara, who was arrested over an alleged election crime. Freddy Beleri was detained just 2 days before local elections that were held in southern Albania on May 14th, but still won the mayoral race. The same court agreed to release his aide, Pantelis Kokavesis, for health reasons, on condition he reports to the police. Both officials had appealed their incarceration. Greece's Foreign Minister Vasilis Kaskarellis had asked for the release of two ethnic Greek men during a meeting with his Albanian counterpart on the sidelines of the informal summit of NATO ministers of foreign affairs in Oslo. Finally, Elas Journal reported on Thursday that U.S. Senator Jim Risch, the top Republican on the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, has approved the sale of F-35 jets to Greece, adding the last signature needed before the deal can go through. The deal was green-lighted by the committee's chair, U.S. Senator Bob Menendez, in February, and has also secured the approval of Michael McCaul, the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and of Gregory Meeks, the ranking Democrat on that committee. Now that the consensus of all four officials has been obtained, the U.S. government will formally notify Congress of the sale of F-35s to Greece. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.